Now let's get back to last week's health report and the story of Dr. Troy Stapleton, a medical specialist on the Sunshine Coast who claims to be controlling his type 1 diabetes, insulin-dependent diabetes, much more effectively on a very low-carb diet compared to the standard diabetes diet he was being encouraged to eat. That and another interview on the show which questioned whether high availability carbs like sugar were the real culprits in the obesity epidemic. And they both generated a lot of interest. And of course, the question arises of the relevance to type 2 diabetes. Well, to give the perspective of a diabetes specialist, here's Martin Camp, an endocrinologist in Brisbane, president of Diabetes Queensland and past president of the Australian Diabetes Society.
We need to be very careful in interpreting one person's experience and applying it across the health sector.
But it's not just one. I mean, there's an endocrinologist in the United States called Richard Bernstein who's written widely on this.
Yes, that's true. I think it's important that we actually start by talking a little bit about what type 1 diabetes is. Quite often, type 1 and type 2 spoken of almost as if they are one condition. Type 1 diabetes occurs most commonly in younger people, but can in fact develop virtually at any age, is a condition in which the body is not able to make sufficient insulin. That is the condition pure and simple.
It's an insulin deficiency.
So if we could, we would treat it by replacing insulin in the way the body gives us insulin in the first place. Unfortunately, we are not able to do that. We are just not as clever as the body cells that control the blood glucose level, the sugar that we have circulating in our bloodstream for energy. We are not as clever at adjusting the insulin in anticipation of changes or in reaction to changes in the blood glucose. So it's for that reason that we recommend various ways of approaching eating and indeed exercise and other aspects of people's lives.
But there is this paradox, which is the main purpose of insulin when you've got an insulin deficiency is to deal with the carbohydrate that you eat. And if you reduce the carbohydrate that you eat, you reduce the demand for insulin and therefore the fluctuations in theory become less, which very, very crudely is the theory behind the low-carb diet or the very low-carb diet and type 1 diabetes.
I think it's important to remember, though, that we're actually trying to help a person live with diabetes. So what we attempt to do is actually allow people to continue to live their life the way they wish, eat the way they wish. We will definitely try to influence the way people eat and then adjust the insulin to it, which after all is what the body does for everybody who does not have type 1 diabetes.
So Martin Camp, the weakness in your argument is that people with type 1 diabetes have very high risk of heart attack later in life, albeit it's reduced if you can keep your blood sugar under control, very high risk of small blood vessel damage, which damages your eyes and your kidneys and so on, even with high quality care. And isn't that Troy Stapleton's argument and Richard Bernstein's argument, is that you might like to continue your lifestyle, but in fact you've got a problem which can profoundly affect your outlook 20 or 30 years from now?
We do have evidence from very well-conducted studies in type 1 diabetes that show that if we improve the glucose control, we use a measure, the A1C.
This is a measure of your control over the previous 3 months.
On average, across populations, that will read about 4 to 6% in people who do not have diabetes. In type 1 diabetes, we know from very well-conducted studies that if we can get that A1C to about 7%, or a little lower if it can be done safely, that we can significantly reduce the risk of complications.
This is the risk of blood sugar going too low and you having blackouts and maybe yourself and maybe doing some long-term damage.
Yes, in the short term, it is actually a limiting factor in how we can treat the condition for many people. However, I think, Norman, there's another important cost, and that is that the cost of asking someone, it's different for somebody such as your guest last week, Troy, or Richard Bernstein, or other people I know who have chosen a low-carbohydrate diet. It's different for them as opposed to us to say to somebody, we are going to require you to eat a very low carbohydrate diet. So the cost of imposing on somebody a diet that is very different to what they would naturally choose, very different to what their peers are choosing, and this is particularly important for teenagers, but indeed for all of us, or very different to what we generally believe to be a reasonably balanced diet.
So, Martin, you're taking a pragmatic view, is that it's a step too far for many people. You're already going to go onto insulin. Going onto a low-carb diet is just going to change their lifestyle so much. But my question to you then is, if you're highly motivated and you decide you want to go onto a low-carbohydrate diet as well as injecting yourself with insulin, is there any evidence of harm? And what's the evidence of benefit?
If somebody wishes to follow a very low carbohydrate diet or even a moderately low carbohydrate diet, my reading of the literature is that there is no evidence of significant harm. But because there has been no really good systematic study of it, we don't know that it is beneficial, but if you take something out of a diet, you need to substitute something in, and we just don't know enough about what happens if we make that much higher protein or much higher fat, particularly the wrong sort of fats. I would also just like to caution anyone who wishes to change their diet radically who has type 1 diabetes that it is important to actually have that done with supervision or at least with recognition that there may be a rather major change in the amount of insulin they require.
Potentially going to tiger country, don't do it as a freelance activity.
That would be my advice.
And just briefly, Martin, because we're almost out of time. What about type 2 diabetes? Entirely different problem where you've got too much insulin because the body's not responding to it. But people are arguing that a low-carb diet is the way forward there because it will empty out the fat cells and actually reduce insulin resistance. What's the evidence that a low-carb diet's good for type 2?
Again, the problem here is that we don't have any good long-term evidence. We do have some good dietary studies looking at prevention of type 2 diabetes. The best study, from my perspective, is one called the Finnish Diabetes Prevention Study. In that study, carbohydrate was not low. Total fat content was kept below 30%, saturated fat content was kept low, and there was a 60% reduction in the risk of people who were at very high risk of developing type 2 diabetes.
So this was essentially a calorie-controlled diet.
And very importantly, a physical activity component. We can achieve significant prevention without carbohydrate restriction. If we look through Southeast Asia, we know that many of the people in Southeast Asia have had traditionally high carbohydrate diets. And it's only more recently, with the more ready availability of higher protein, higher fat, and a calorie excess, that they are moving on to developing higher rates of type 2 diabetes. So I think for type 2 diabetes, a practical, simple message for people is activity and calorie control, and then we start getting to the finer points within the diet. But for most people who are overweight or at risk of type 2 diabetes, activity and calorie reduction would go a long way to achieving most of the benefit that we need to achieve.
Martin Kemp, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Norman. It's a pleasure.
Dr. Martin Kemp, who's an endocrinologist from Brisbane, and he's also president of Diabetes Queensland and a past president of the Australian Diabetes Society. I'm Norman Swan, and this has been a very healthy health report. I'll see you next time.